This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia, the place you need to be for the next hour for information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact.
All right, and Steve, do I have you? Is it sounding any better?
It sounds perfect on my end right now.
Great, great. Okay, that's not my normal opening, but that's okay. I wanted to make sure we were clear. Let me go through the normal opening and launch right into the show. And so, after all of that opening music, if you want to get your ideas or help others get theirs into action, you're in the right place for the next 60 minutes. And if you need to get out of your head and get things done, that's the important word, get things done, then stay tuned for the next hour. I'm Sylvia Henderson, and I'm honored that you've chosen to spend your most valuable resource in your life, your time, with me today. This show is about ideas, getting, clarifying, implementing, and supporting ideas. I interview people who've put ideas into action, realized their dreams, achieved their goals, and followed through with their intentions to bring you best practices you can use right away to actively create your own success. And I interview experts in a wide range of fields who are resources for you to call on to make an income and an impact with your ideas. And who I have as my guest today is sort of someone who's done both, put a lot of ideas into action, and is a resource for you to help get yours into action and stay in action, and that is Mr. S.J. Scott. And I don't know whether you want me to call you S.J. or Steve, so hi, welcome.
Hi, Sylvia. Honestly, Steve's best. I actually went with SJ as a kind of pen name on Amazon to kind of differentiate two types of book line, but now I'm actually coming back to the whole just original Steve Scott just to make it a little bit simpler and easier to remember.
Ah, okay, cool. Then Steve, let me read off, which I do because some people listen to this. In fact, probably more people listen to this not looking at a screen than looking at a screen. So I'd like to read off the title and the description, and then we will content. So the title is, for this program, is called Habit-Stack for Humanity. Habit-Stack for Humanity, which is a play on words, of course, of small actions that can bring large results. And so I say, join author S.J. Scott as we discuss his concept of and best-selling books on habit stacking. You'll discover how making small changes that take 5 minutes or less can dramatically move you forward with your ideas, projects, intentions, goals, and relationships, and life. And the reason why I asked you to be on the show, Steve, is that I read your book, Habit Stacking, probably a few months ago when I first contacted you. And number one, I don't read a lot of books. I listen to a lot of books on CD in my car, but I don't read a lot of books. And so after I went through, your book looked like it was an easy read, and the title interested me because I'm about helping people get into action with the ideas they have. And that's probably the hardest part of my coaching and consulting practice, is getting people to take action and stay in action. So The whole concept of habit stacking really appealed to me. How did you get started? I mean, what idea did you have, whatever, way back, to get started really focusing on habits?
That's actually a fairly long story, but I started specifically with Kindle Publishing, which is taking ideas and putting them in small kind of booklets and putting them up on Amazon. I started that really full-time in September 2012, and I did that for about a year and a half, and I decided that for the most part I was writing about internet business and Kindle Publishing, kind of like the online entrepreneur type of space, and I kind of wanted to go into a different direction and talk specifically about habits because I realized that habits were really at the core of everything that I've done online for about a decade or so. And just along the way, I decided to kind of take the same principles. Instead of talking about internet business, I would take one aspect of habit development and center a whole book around each type of concept I've used in my personal life.
And because you, just to let the audience know, listening audience know a little bit more about you. What's your, you know, what's your background? How did you come to be doing this? You know, or to even be starting doing the Kindle publishing?
Yeah, that's probably an even longer story. But I started the kind of online business type of career back in 2004. And probably like a lot of people, I was one of those type of individuals. I really didn't like working at a 9-to-5 job. And I had, even before that, I would say from 1999 all the way to 2004, I had a career in the military. And then I got out and I had a couple of entry-level jobs that really just didn't resonate with me. And it wasn't like any of the jobs themselves were that bad. The people were nice people. I liked working with them. It's just kind of the idea of not having personal freedom in my own life, kind of just to start something on my own. And I would say from 2004 to 2012, I did a bunch of various different types of online businesses, including affiliate marketing, blogging, a kind of YouTube video marketing. There's just a lot of different things I did during the course of, I would say, 8 years. And the one thing that really kind of stood out for me, the one business model, is affiliate marketing. But then eventually I decided to kind of use Amazon platform as a way to generate traffic to my affiliate marketing properties. But then I quickly realized that that was a whole business model that could be kind of its own thing. Instead of actually using it for traffic generation, I could actually build a business out of like providing small little books. So for the people listening, if you've ever read a blog, kind of the nature of a blog is it talks about one topic, and each individual article kind of dives into a different aspect of that topic. So I kind of took that framework, put it into Kindle publishing, where you take a giant, broad topic, and each book kind of covers a different aspect of that.
And you're launching into, and I want to dig a little deeper into that. I want to take this time with you in sort of two directions. Number one, about the book writing itself, and I mean not getting into a whole lot of how-to detail, but at least cover, you know, writing a book is something that I hear a lot from potential clients and clients that I coach. And because I say I help you get your ideas into action. A lot of folks come to me, speakers and otherwise coaches, and say, I've got this book in me, or I've got this book on my computer, and I've always wanted to write this book, but I haven't seemed to be able to get it written. And, you know, you've written, well, what I have down here from your website is 42 books. You may have written more by this time. So kind of take us through just how do you take your idea and turn it into a book? I mean, you know, what goes through your head and your process?
Well, first off, and I just from listening to the intro of your podcast, I can tell that you probably would recommend something like this. But first off is always write everything down that pops in your head, no matter how silly or stupid of an idea it is. Just constantly practice the daily habit of when something pops up, just write it down immediately. Like, for instance, if I'm driving a car, I have an app on my phone where I just, like, press a button. It just records my thoughts while I'm driving. I'm constantly writing stuff down on a piece of paper. But specifically, the app that really helps me kind of just at least collect all the ideas that I have is Evernote. So I'm constantly putting stuff in Evernote just to make sure that I'm getting that stuff down. And then from there, it's just I do follow a process where I try to at least kind of vet the idea. So I'll look at pre-existing content and see what's been written about that, specifically on the Amazon marketplace. Sometimes I don't always do that. Like we're going to be talking about habit stacking. That was an idea I didn't see anything out there written about it, and maybe that's why that book in particular did well. But at least try to see if the kernel of the idea that there's some legs to it. And I guess as a side note, the one thing about writing a book is really the only thing you have to waste is a little bit of your time and some money just to put the formatting and the editing and the cover together. So it's not like you're going to waste a lot of money just even trying to publish a book. But I would say from there, it's just really about systems for me. I will take that idea and I'll just do a complete brain dump onto a piece of paper. So I'll spend usually about a week just thinking about the idea, constantly writing down thoughts, just making sure, again, to always capture every possible idea. And a lot of times when I'm walking and running, and I find that that's the best time for me to actually make sure I'm getting those ideas into my head, just kind of that just conscious or subconscious thing where you're not directly thinking about business, but your mind just kind of floating around as your exercise. I find that just for me, that's the best time that things pop in my head. And then from there, I just put everything down to a brain dump. And I take that, all those random thoughts, I put them in a stack of index cards. And I find, for me personally, it's just something about the tactile sensation of writing stuff down in index cards and sorting those index cards, ripping them up, ripping up certain ideas that really just don't work, and just kind of using the index card as the bare kind of backbone of a of an actual book. And from there, I just take the index card, do a really kind of quick and dirty rough draft. I don't even worry about editing or spelling or anything. I just try to get the words as fast on the paper as possible, and then from there, I just do a deep edit with a second draft, third draft, and I really just try to fine-tune the actual draft. But I guess for me is I try to never let my conscious thought get in the way of writing. I just find, for me and a lot of other people, that when you're trying to write the perfect paragraph, that your kind of internal editor will get in the way of you actually creating the content. So it's best just to let your subconscious write the book and just actually turn on, kind of put on your editing hat to actually fine-tune your book.
Perfect. I couldn't have directed you through that process any better. Because you're right. That's some version of what I do to help people get their ideas out, the ideation, and then sorting it down. I love the synthesis and the index cards, and my favorite's post-it notes, but it doesn't matter.
I use them too as well.
Yeah. And Evernote, my favorite app. I'm not a huge electronics person, but if there is one, Evernote is it. And I hope you're getting sponsored by them or something with recommending.
I did write a book about how to use it, so I guess I get a side benefit of recommending. But yeah, I definitely use the app all the time.
Yeah, great. And do you ever get stuck with trying to be perfect or make sure you got everything down that you want to write? Sometimes I hear, well, there's more I really wanted to add to the book.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, if you read Stephen King's On Writing, he talks about chopping about 10 to 20% of your book, and I guess he has the expression, kill your darlings. I guess the same would apply to nonfiction as well. For me, I just primarily talk about, I only write nonfiction stuff. So it's the same thing, that you might find the story personally interesting, but you kind of have to be a little bit brutal in the final draft and really ask yourself, is this something that helps people solve whatever problem, or is it just kind of a fluffy thing that really makes you feel good about yourself but doesn't really actually help the end reader? Now, like, I know I don't have the actual professional editors that go through my book like someone who does do traditional publishing, but I try to be as self-editing as possible. So I do recommend you actually you be as brutal as possible with your own content and try to eliminate as much needless stuff as you can.
What's your filter? How do you know what to write next? Is it what the world is talking about? Is it what's trending? Is it just what you feel you need to get out of you? What's your filter?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't really have a great filter because I tend to write about what I find personally interesting, and sometimes that really equates to something that is currently popular. Sometimes it's just a bit of an esoteric topic that I find might be useful to people, but I find that really I haven't found, for me at least, a positive correlation between what's actually popular and how it actually sells. So I know, for instance, the book I wrote about Evernote, that's a pretty popular topic, and that does fairly well, but the habit stacking thing wasn't something I talked about before, but I felt it was just something that I felt people could find use from, and both had done pretty well. But then I wrote a book about New Year's resolution, and I released it right around New Year's Eve, and that one completely bombed. So I don't really have a rhyme or reason why certain books do well and certain books don't. So I generally tried to go with what I think would be helpful and then try to frame it in a way that it would seem at least interesting to the mass market people, to people that instead of actually really trying to drill down as a general population.
Yeah, okay, cool. One of the things that, and I may jump in back and forth between book writing and habits, but that's okay.
Sure.
One of the things that struck me in, I don't remember whether it was the intro or the ending, whatever, in habit stacking, was your brand is kind of habit. Yet you talk, I hear a lot of people, a lot of time management people talk about it starting small and then building up to working on something for a longer period of time versus what you say about habits being the habit that I pick up today should still take me 5 minutes, you know, 6 months from now. So I haven't built on timing. Talk about that differentiation a little bit more.
Sure. Actually, probably a pretty good book on the subject is written by my friend Stephen Geis called Mini Habits. And that's a little bit about what you're talking about. And actually, it's been a year since I've written Habits back, and I'm actually currently doing a second edition. I actually will cover this. But I think he phrases it best that there's certain habits, like I'm going to use running and or exercising in general or writing, just two habits that you can do it for 3-4 hours at a time. But the problem that most people have is with getting started is they simply just they haven't developed the actual kind of muscle memory to do it on a consistent basis. So what he's recommended, and actually there's another website called tinyhabits.com by BJ Fogg, he talks about a very similar thing, is it's more important to kind of do the habit on a daily basis than it is to do for a certain period of time. So if you're trying to build the writing habit, it's better to kind of make a micro commitment to, say, just write a paragraph and just make sure you do that on a consistent basis and commit yourself to only writing a paragraph. But if you find yourself suddenly wanting to write more, then by all means do more. But all you're really committing to is a paragraph. Now, the difference between that and kind of what again, this is I feel that there's certain things that habit stacking should explain better. So I want to at least clarify in this interview. The thing with certain habits I would recommend in habit stacking routine is it should be fairly self-contained. So if you want to review your goals on a daily basis, that could be one habit. But you don't necessarily have to add time to it. So reviewing goals only takes 2 or 3 minutes if you actually look at a goal and do the kind of affirmation thing where you repeat it to yourself. But don't necessarily, it's not like you can do a 30-minute goal review routine. Or drinking a protein shake, you can't add more time to that and drink a bunch of protein shakes. It really only takes a certain amount of time to do that particular habit. So what I would kind of recommend with a habit stacking routine is just to take all those little kind of minute, small 5-minute or less type of habits, group them together in a single routine, and just make sure you do that routine on a daily basis. So in a way, that 30-minute routine would be its own kind of macro-level type of habit. Does that explain things? I'm trying to explain something that I wrote a year ago, so it's hopefully a little bit clear.
That's okay. Well, that explains some of it. You also talked, which is what really struck me, you also, in the same explanation, it was if I want to, you know, change, if I want to do something that changes my behavior, I think you picked exercise was one, it was an example of one way to attack it would be start out 5 minutes on the rowing, on the exercise bike. And then, you know, typically exercise routines are the next week you do 10 minutes on the rowing bike, on the exercise bike. And the next week, you know, 15 minutes. And eventually, with that system, you find that you're taking a whole doggone half hour on the bike, and that's leading into time away from something else. And then you stop doing it because it's taking too much time. Whereas yeah. your habits, if I say I want to drink more water, you know, have more water in my body, my diet. If I say I'm going to drink a glass of water, that takes me all of 30 seconds to a minute. And I'm more likely to keep drinking water if it stays that 30 seconds to a minute because I haven't added time as the weeks go by. That was the concept that struck me.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say it really is a very delicate balancing act, and that's just something I struggle with myself, that sometimes when I have a project that's looming, I know I can keep to a basic level of exercise, but trying to train for a marathon and release a project all in the same week sometimes is really hard to do because you're literally taking time from one area to another. But like what I would definitely recommend or emphasize for habit stacking as far as just kind of finding those little things that you want to do that you know only takes a couple minutes a day and just putting them together, and that's kind of off the side. So you do that 30-minute routine, but you're not necessarily trying to increase those habits. But I would say if you want to kind of start exercise or start a habit that can actually grow in length, I would say you do a habit stacking routine and immediately roll into something that could grow in length. So 30 minutes of habit stacking, and then once you finish that, sit down and write. And if you want to write for 5-10 minutes, that's okay. But then you can leave yourself open to adding more time at the end of that particular type of sequence.
Yeah, that's what I liked. I picked probably three. I took about 3 to 4 habits from your habit stacking book, and we can talk about other books too, by the way. If there's, you know, something in some of the other books you really want to make sure you get out. I just happen to be stuck on habit stacking because that's the one I read thoroughly now twice and picked. I'm trying to find my top three habits that actually 2 of the 3 still doing pretty well with. One was the water. That was for real because I don't drink enough water. And I thought, you know, I can handle 1 or 2 glasses of water in a day. So the habit I picked, and I think it was, I lost the number now. Is it number 1 or number 65 where you had the water? And it's just drink 1 large glass of water. It took 2 minutes. I think you had down 2 minutes, and I thought, okay, I can do that. So every morning, I just drink 1 glass of water. Sometimes I do more, but I say, okay, minimum, so that it doesn't, quote, interfere with the rest of my day. I can handle the 1 glass. The other one that struck me, I have an office full of piles because I'm a speaker, a trainer, an author, so, of course, paper is all over the place. And I've been trying to get to cleaning off my desk. Floral and cleaning off the floor space for I can't tell you how long. Once I read your book, I thought, okay, because you really stressed either 5 minutes or five, I think I made it 5 items or 5 minutes that I could stick to. And I thought, I'm just taking 5 pieces of paper, literally 5 pieces of paper each day, and or 5 minutes. So sometimes 1 piece of paper takes about 5 minutes to figure out what to do with it or scan it or something like that, and have been able to stick with that 5 pieces of paper or 5 minutes. Don't get more ambitious or then it'll get, you know, overwhelming later and you stop doing it. So those two have stuck with me. I'm pretty, you know, the book has had that direct effect.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Actually, it's funny because I'm about to release a book about doing the decluttering habit, and I guess I'm getting away a little bit from the habit stacking. We have the 10-minute decluttering habit, so that's actually something I did a couple of months back where I just realized I want to get rid of a lot of stuff in my life, but I didn't want to have to spend a whole weekend doing it. So I was like, you know what, I can do my habit stacking routine and just do 10 minutes right after that and just get rid of a lot of stuff. And I guess the point of kind of all this stuff for people listening, that if you have a large project, you can also do that where something like a minimizing or just get rid of stuff, just commit yourself to doing a little bit of time, a little bit of other items or a few minutes every single day, and you'll be surprised at how well you can move mountains just by continuously working at a project and just chipping away. And I guess just a lot of us out there, we just don't think we have enough time to do something, but when you kind of put it in a step-by-step framework, it is easier to just take a large task and just really break it down into simple actions.
How do you write? I'm jumping back to book writing. How do you write? Because I noticed your books, your topics are varied. It still centers around habits, so, you know, you've branded yourself. But how do you write about so many different things? Because as I'm looking at your website, which for folks, by the way, is developgoodhabits.com, great URL, you write about Evernote, you've written about exercise, you've written about leveling up the day, of course, the habit stacking, which is kind of general, procrastination, entrepreneurship, writing itself. Sometimes we hear we should focus on a niche, focus on a topic when we write, and people get stuck with, but I know so many things. How do you stay the expert when you've written about so many different topics?
I'm not sure I have a great answer to that, but I guess just a natural curiosity for self-improvement would be the best answer I can come up with. And specifically, if I want to kind of take care of one area of my life, I'll go out and kind of do what a lot of people do. I'll go out and try to learn as much as possible, find as many resources and just how-tos as possible, create a simple kind of already like a project plan. So here's what you need to do to improve the area of your life. Then go out and do it for a couple of months, find kind of what I learned, kind of lessons learned from developing that my own, that habit in my own life, and then the books just come out are kind of a natural extension of just doing that in my own life and just kind of talking about the results I've had from it. But actually, and sometimes if I really just don't know a topic, like for instance decluttering, I would definitely not consider myself a decluttering expert. So I work with Barry Davenport, who's my co-author in that particular book, and she actually explained some things, and I kind of follow along with what she was doing in her own life. I just applied to my own type of life, and I just from there I just was able to write a book. So a lot of times it's just kind of a amalgamation of just my own personal experience, research I've done, which I always cite in my books, and just trying to provide as helpful how-to information as possible.
Okay, you just said something that I think that I want those who are thinking about a book to actually hear, and that is you reached out and you co-write some of your books with other people. How's that work for you? Do you ever feel like, oh, I want this book to be mine, or, you know, that's, which is ego, or is it perfectly fine that you're co-writing with somebody else because, you know, the results are the same, people buy your book?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's the first off is you really have to leave your ego at the door, and you can't have the type of attitude where it's my way or the highway. For me, honestly, I'm trying to learn how to be a good co-writer. So I definitely feel sometimes I control the process too much, and I feel that the people I'm writing with usually could do a better job if they're left to their own devices. But a lot of it really is process. So one of us will come up with the idea, and actually the last couple of books has been their idea, not mine. We talk about it, have a general framework of what we want to talk about. One of us will write an outline, pass it to the other person. That person will write their version of the outline. Then the next person, like, and it's just constantly passed back and forth. Then the next person will write the rough draft, pass it back to that person, next draft. And it's just constantly just going back and forth between each person as they add their thoughts. And then once in a while, I won't really know what I'm talking about in this section. I'll just leave a note and say, hey, can you explain what you mean here, or just add a personal story from your own experience here. So I try to like let the other person have an opportunity to really grow, not grow, an opportunity to really actually provide as in a story kind of filled. I'm not explaining this well. I try to provide an opportunity for the other writer to add as much as they want to the process, to the overall writing. But it really is the whole thing's kind of a learning experience, because you really do have to make sure that the book is kind of describing what both people feel about the particular subject, and not just one person basically writing the whole draft and the other person just kind of editing it.
Have you ever wanted to be, or has your goal ever to be, a bestseller, whether it's an Amazon bestseller or whether it's any other version of bestseller, or you just let that happen if it happens?
Yeah, I've been technically, I guess, an Amazon bestseller like multiple times over. I think at one point I had a book that was like number 30 overall in Amazon. So I've achieved that, I guess. I don't really worry too much about vanity metrics. But as far as New York Best Time Bestseller, it sounds strange to say, but I really just don't have a desire to. I don't really want to go the route of actually being traditionally published and having someone else kind of tell me what to do with my business, or send it to an editor and basically say, oh, I don't want this. And I find for me, I like having complete freedom and control over how the actual book is published, marketed, priced. I think the only really way to get become a New York Times bestseller really is to go traditional publishing route. So I just don't really want to go down that road.
Yeah. I kind of get that. Years ago, when I started my speaking career, people would say, oh, you need to try to get on Oprah. You need to try to get on Oprah, because that was like the big thing back then. You know, if you're on Oprah, your life has been made. And I used to, back and I think, I kind of don't care whether I'm on Oprah, which sounded strange to a lot of people. But, you know, I'm a business coach. And, I guess an appearance on Oprah would increase, you know, business with a certain audience, but that didn't happen to be my audience. So I get that. Yeah, you know, it's a little different story, but in a way, it's the same thing.
No,
I didn't care about
that. Very, very similar,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. So how do you parlay authorship into more business? Because, you know, we hear all the time, you will never get rich being an author or selling your book. Although I guess after 42, maybe so. But how do you parlay authorship into more business, other business?
To be honest, I feel I might be an outlier in this instance, but I actually do have a business just from selling books. So up until recently, I really haven't cared with other businesses, like trying to build other businesses, because I do have my books. I do have audio versions of my books, foreign translation. So I have actually scaled it out to other properties. That said, I'm actually looking, and this is literally this week I started thinking about this, so I don't really have examples of what to talk about, but I'm looking at actually getting, kind of finding one niche within the habits market. So I'm trying to think off the top of my head. So I wrote a book about walking. So for instance, that would be a niche, the walking niche. People are interested in walking and trying to find physical products to actually sell to that particular crowd. So I'm actually right now looking into sourcing from China, creating physical products and selling them on Amazon, but using my kind of existing kind of platform that I have in the habits market to sell those products. So that would be one way I'm kind of looking to kind of grow beyond the books themselves. But I'm pretty careful with my time. I actually prefer not to be a coach or a consultant just because I don't really like trading time for money. And that was kind of your intro. You said investing an hour of your time. What was that? Investing an hour of the most precious asset you have, time?
Yep. Yeah, spend an hour of your most precious resource. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a great example. And I'm very mindful about when I spend my time. I want to make sure I'm spending my time on something that could grow without me being involved in the process. And the kind of downside of coaching consulting is you have to be there and actually invest your time, unless you actually run a business where you're basically hiring other coaches and consultants and you're just running the business itself. But I try not to invest my time into anything that requires just continuous usage of my time, I guess.
Okay, which makes sense considering you started out with internet marketing, and that's sort of a similar thing in that it's not time for money either. You're reaching the masses and parlaying that resource. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess it does come from the I don't really buy into the 4-hour work week where you don't have to work and run a business and it makes money on its own. I don't really buy into that, but at least the mindset that I really try to make sure that where I am in the world and what time I have to spend into is not directly connected to one another. So basically, I'm getting married in July. I'm going on a month honeymoon in Hawaii. I like to kind of knowing the fact that my business will be generating income in the background while I'm actually not really doing anything or working on it. But I would say as far as a long-term strategy, you always want to make sure that you're constantly doing stuff to grow it. So you can take time off here and there, but it's not exactly the laptop lifestyle that's, I guess, advertised by some.
Another publishing or writing question, and then I'm not sure whether, no, actually, before I ask you that, since we're about halfway through, want to make sure you get out a couple times during the program, how people reach you and where they can get buy your books and any other promotion you want to do.
Sure.
I would say
probably the best place to find me would be habitbooks.com. And that used to automatically redirect to Amazon, but I actually have a pre-sale page on my blog that kind of describes what each book is about, a kind of a Cliff Notes version. It provides links to just Amazon, different countries in Amazon. So, for instance, like Amazon Brazil, Amazon Germany. And there's also a free audiobook trial for certain audiobooks. So I would say just go to habitbooks.com and just check out what I have there.
You were mentioning, in fact, one of the things you said was foreign publishing. That's a concept that I don't hear a lot of folks talk about, especially if they're self-published. How in the world do you get into the foreign interpretations of your book and have, you know, publishing happen not in America?
It's a challenging thing, and I don't feel I've quite unlocked it yet. There's a couple of ways to go about it. I guess first way is to do it yourself. So you work out a relationship with a translator. You agree to split the royalties 50-50, and you work together to do some marketing. I'll explain that in a bit. Another way is foreign companies, so foreign publishing companies, for instance, Thailand, China, Poland, they'll contact you. And I think what they do is they tend to scour the top 100 lists on Amazon. So if they see a book selling well, they'll just directly contact you. Unfortunately, you can't really systematize that. You have to do well, and then they contact you, and then you have to kind of work out a deal with them. And another way is there's a site called BattleKey where you can upload a book, and they'll kind of handle the whole process. I do mention them, but I'm not really a big fan of how their structure works, but I have tried them in the past. So there's those three type of relationships. But the one I really like is the one where you work with a marketing partner, and kind of let me explain it real quick. So the idea here is you want to work with someone who is a native speaker of that language. So off the top of my head, the books that do best for me are in Brazil. So you have someone who's from Brazil, so they speak Portuguese. They'll do a direct translation of your book, but as an author, and I would recommend this to any author, you actually handle all the rights of your books, and you handle all the uploading and control of how the book is actually marketed. And through Amazon, you can just directly upload your book, make sure you tick the actual language that's in. So I make sure I always tick it, and it's in Portuguese. You upload the book, and you can actually sell it on different platforms. So you could sell on Amazon.com.br, which is in Brazil. And there's a whole untapped market of Brazilian ebook readers there. So I think actually last week one of my books was like number one overall in Brazil. So it is possible to actually sell in these markets. It is hard in certain languages like the Asian language, like Chinese, simplified complex Chinese, Japanese, Thai. It's pretty hard to sell there because it's their formatting is completely different than ours. So I would say in that case you really want to try to track down a publishing company in that country to actually just pay you an advance, almost like a traditionally published deal where they pay you an advance on your books and then you get royalties down the road.
Right, right. Okay.
It's that a always seemed big like process.
Okay, good. Yeah, that always seemed like a mystery to me, the foreign translation. It's like, wow, how do you get visible in another country?
So, yeah.
That's good. So I'm going to move shift back to habits again. What are your top, and this is take across the board because you got a lot of books about habits. What are your top, I'd say, 3 to 5 habits that you stick to, work on diligently and consciously in your daily life?
That is constantly evolving, but I would say the ones I really do make sure I do on a daily basis, nonfiction reading, so I make sure I'm always reading something on a daily basis that helps either my personal life or my business. So that's one. I would say the most important things list, and that's really just you look at your business day and you write down the 2 to 3 actions that would have the biggest benefit, the biggest kind of moving the needle for your business or your personal life for people that don't actually have their own business. So I make sure I write that at the beginning every single day, and I put that on a post-it note. And I put that post-it note on my to-do list. I would say past there, I'm always making sure I write down the basic stats for my business on a daily basis. So that's how many email subscribers I got, how many sales, just all the tiny little metrics. And I put that all in the same spreadsheet so I can look at that on a daily basis. And I do have my VA, my virtual assistant, actually do this on a monthly level, but I like doing it myself so I can kind of keep my head in the game to make sure that I'm kind of staying on top of what I need to get done. I would say writing is a fairly regular habit for me, but I don't do it necessarily every single day. I do take the weekends off just because I kind of like to just relax on weekends and not really worry about having to stick to a certain schedule. And then past that, it's exercise. I always try to make sure I get a lot of exercise on a daily basis. I'm either walking, mostly running, cycling, just getting outdoors and doing something. I try to make sure I do that on a regular basis. In retrospect, kind of what I just described are the basic, very core strategies, kind of the fundamentals I think help my overall life.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to know. I mean, I get that there's probably different habits at different times, or depending on your next goal, or depending on the next thing you want to do, achieve, you know, in the next 6 months, that might dictate something else too, but I wondered about your overall. Just, I think people wonder, okay, so he writes about habits. What are his habits? What stops us? What have you found over the years that stops people from following through with and continuing on long term with the habits that they start developing?
The more I talk about this and actually the more I apply it in my life, it's what I realized that what I mentioned before, my friend Mini Habits, my friend Stephen Geis for this book, Mini Habits, Kind of what he talks about, it's just overcommitting to a habit. So you decide it's New Year's Eve, so January 1st, you're going to start changing your life. You're going to change 7 different areas of your life, and you're going to do 30 minutes of each one of these type of activities, and everything's going to be perfect. And you might do it for a day or two, but then everything literally falls off. The wheels completely fall off, and you're just back to your old behavior. I think what stops people is they just try to overcommit to too much. And really what you need to do is, A, identify an area of your life that you really want to fix, and just B, focus on one or two small actions that you can to kind of improve that area of your life. So if you want to lose weight, then maybe commit to eating a bowl of salad every single day. And that literally is the only action you worry about for the next 30 to 60 days, just making sure you get that bowl of salad. And that would almost be considered what's called a keystone habit, where you commit to doing one habit and that has a positive carryover effect in the rest of your life. So perhaps you commit to eating that bowl of salad, and then you realize that at night you always have a bowl of ice cream, but something about eating that bowl of salad is a kind of reminder that you want to lose weight. So maybe once or twice a week you skip that bowl of ice cream at the end of the day, and you slowly start to drop weight. And once you're on a regular routine where you always eat a bowl of salad, maybe you start adding something new to your day. So maybe you start writing down all the foods that you do on a regular basis into a food journal. And then once you start to recognize certain foods, you'll, without even committing to not eating certain foods, you just find yourself naturally and almost subconsciously skipping those meals. So I would say really the answer of what's stopping people is just the fact that they try to do too much all at once. And I would just say focus in on one area, commit yourself to one habit, and you'll just find that you will improve that area of your life if you really stick to it on a daily basis.
Mm. Any misconceptions or untruths about habits that you encounter that you would like to clear out?
I would say kind of just what we talked about, the fact that you can change your life all at once. And I've never seen anyone that's been able to do that. And I've heard of people talk a big game about, I was able to develop these 10 different habits. And just from my own experience and from talking to a number of people, I've never seen evidence of people being able to completely overhaul their life all at once. And this really goes back to a concept known as ego depletion, that basically we all have a finite resource of willpower. So you exert your willpower by not eating certain food, by forcing yourself to exercise, to not yell at your boss if they're getting mad at you and they're yelling back. Like, there's all these uses of willpower that you exert every single day, and it really does have the same, it is the same resource. So if you're trying to build a new habit and you're drawing from willpower, there's only so much you can draw from your willpower, and that's why a lot of times at the end of the day, people completely miss their goals because they're really tired, they had a bad day at work, the kids are screaming, and late at night they're hungry, so instead of eating that bowl of salad like they wanted to, they go grab a bowl of ice cream because they feel that they deserved it because they had a bad day. But so I would say, to kind of answer that question, is that if you try to do too much all at once, you're really just tapping into a very limited source of your willpower, and it's just better to really focus in on one thing like we talked about before.
And it seems like you're almost defeating yourself by setting these incredible goals and intentions, and then finding excuses for doing them because they're so overwhelming.
Yeah, actually, I think you phrased that better than I did. Absolutely.
Cool.
And I would say from a business standpoint, like, you know, there's people that are trying to get into a business, they set a goal that in 2015, I'm going to make $1 million, but they haven't made $100 in a single month. It's better to set a achievable goal like $500 to $1,000. Yes, you can have a goal of ultimately making $1 million, but it's better to just focus on something that's completely achievable and doable, get to that point, and start redoing your goals to figure out what's next and how to grow from there.
Wow. Now, do you have, as we're talking, a lot of these questions to me are coming up for me just in natural conversation. I don't have them written down here. As you were talking, I'm thinking, now these things, developing good habits, that seems like a very good thing to be teaching younger people. I don't know how young to start. I don't have kids. Any thoughts on how do we instill good habits and teach good habits to the developing minds and developing behaviors, however young you want to venture talking about?
This is hard because I try to write from my own personal experiences, and I don't have kids. I am getting married, and we are planning on starting a family pretty much right away. So I can only talk about my experience of my parents. kind of how I was raised. And I would say, first off, as a blanket statement, turn off the damn video games. They're not helping anybody. I guess this is a bit of a rant, but I find that in our day and age, all this technology and people's noses in the video screen is not very healthy. So I would say start off by like a really just a commitment to schedules and how people are used with their electronics and their video games. But I would say really it just comes down to honestly just good parenting. I learned at a right age or a young age what's right and what's wrong. My dad was pretty strict about certain types of what he called low kind of what do you call them? Low rent habits, like stuff that if you want to really be a failure in life, you don't do certain things.
Low impact,
Yeah, I don't know. It's just my parents always emphasize good positive habits. Like my dad always kind of rewards certain behaviors that I was never. If I wanted a video game. Or a video game or a toy or something like that, I had to earn at least half the amount of it, or otherwise I wouldn't get it. But things like books were free. So if I went to the bookstore with my dad and I wanted to read a book, he would buy it for me. So that kind of incentivized positive habits. So if I wanted to read or do something that did have a positive effect on kind of my whole life, he would really try to do as much as possible to make sure I did those certain habits. So I don't know. I guess a good answer is just reward behavior you think is beneficial and not necessarily punish, but kind of dissuade behavior that isn't a good habit. And again, I'm probably talking out my butt here because I'm not a parent. So trust me, when I do become a parent, I will talk to as many people as possible and read as many books as possible.
And there you go. There's fodder for at least a good number, 10 more books as you're raising your future children on both four children. That's another whole audience. How do you get kids to about good habits themselves, you know, through children's books, so there's another venue for you, and then habits for parenting as you go through that.
Yeah, what just popped in my head is this all sounds great on paper, and I do recognize that it's not always easy, but there's a very famous quote that no plan survives contact with the first contact with the enemy. So in other words, plans are great and all, but until you have a kid, you really don't know what it's like. So I do recognize that as I'm talking.
Oh yeah, and same here. I don't profess to have answers for youth because I don't have them. Although I have to laugh. One of your, as I look at your habit stacking book, you're in the back. It talks about habit stacking disruptions and challenges. What to do? Strategy number one: have an if-then plan. That's almost perfect for parenting.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, The idea there of if-end plans is just the idea that no world is like your world isn't perfect, that there are many obstacles and challenges you experience on a regular basis. So it almost involves kind of creative thinking of what will get in the way of what normally gets in the way of me achieving this habit, and actually just run through your head. Do my kids interrupt me when I'm doing this, or does my phone constantly ring? So you almost want to have a little script of how you'll handle certain situations in your life and kind of almost have like a backup plan for that. So if my phone rings and I can't do this habit, I will commit to doing the habit stacking routine in the evening at this time. So you just almost want to create little scenarios in your head of how you'll handle certain types of challenges.
What do you say no to? I know some of these questions are like, man, what do you think of them? What do you say no to? Because obviously in order to say yes and stick to certain habits, you kind of have to say no to some things. You know, what are your priorities?
I say no to actually, I say no to like 80-90% of stuff that's I come across. So from a business standpoint, I say no to what we talked about before, any sort of coaching or consulting type of offer. I say no to a lot, pretty much most of the stuff business wise that it comes across my path. From a habit standpoint, I try to do certain habits, but I find that if it's just not providing any benefit in my life or it's just doesn't really seem to be working out for me, I'm not afraid to completely ditch it, because I do know that sometimes it's okay to start something and just stop it, not because you're a failure, but just sometimes because you recognize that you don't get much value from it. So I would say just those two kind of things. That just you have to learn really what matters to you most in life and really try to build things around what matters most in life, and don't be afraid to say no to people or any sort of offers or pretty much anything if you just don't think it works for kind of your own life.
I love that. I love that answer because so many of us are giving, and so many people can be demanding of our giving and of our time, and we can find ourselves so far away from our own goals and our own dreams by saying yes to other people's. So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's like hard that. Because you do feel guilty sometimes. A lot of times the guilt is just, it isn't actually important. So, for instance, if you say no to a project, a lot of times people don't really, aren't that worked up. If you say no and you give them a solid reason why you say no, a lot of times people will just carry on with the rest of their lives and just, they'll continue, they'll find somebody else.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So what haven't I asked you? I love to ask this question. What haven't I asked you that you want listeners to know about, whether it's habit stacking or, you know, habits in general or anything else? What? Yeah.
So that's a hard one to answer. I would say just the why is starting small important, and I would say just, if you're trying to do anything in your life, and maybe we already have touched on this, but I would say if you have a goal, really you should just focus in on just the minimally viable product. So there's that business term that just get a product out there and see what the world thinks. I would say you could apply the same thing to have, is just figure out what's the bare minimum you can do and just commit to it on a daily basis instead of trying to do everything all in one day.
Love that. We're so results-driven or goal-driven or got-to-get-things-done-driven that at least I know I am. I live in the Washington, D.C. area, so I want to talk about drive.
Yeah,
there's a lot of drive around here.
Definitely. I have family there, and it's a whole different world down there.
Although for me, I wouldn't be anywhere else. I love it. But, you have to learn. Yeah, you're right. You have to learn how to balance that, how to live life in a certain area and not allow it to make you crazy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. You live, I don't know if you want to say that on air or not.
I was saying I live in New Jersey, so we definitely have a very fast-paced lifestyle as well here. I learned to kind of separate myself from that just frenetic type of way of going.
Great. So what's next for you? And I realize the people who listen to this 6 months down the road, it may have already happened because you are an implementer. But what's next for you? And once again, how can people get your stuff and learn more about you?
Sure. Yeah, I'd say next couple of, I'm continuously writing books. So next couple of books is about decluttering, how to basically be an introvert in an extroverted world and kind of the habits of what to do without kind of drawing away from what I consider a pretty positive personality trait, and actually writing the second version of habit stacking. So I'd say those are my next couple of book projects. But pretty much after that, getting married, going on a month-long honeymoon, and going on another vacation with her after that. So that's pretty much my life until September. So, I'm continuing the habit stuff. I'm actually making a couple of decisions as far as where to take my business, but I don't really have any concrete plans at this point.
All right. A man without a 20-page business plan.
No. I have ideas, but I tend to not verbalize stuff nowadays until I'm actually 100% sure I'm really going to do something. And I've definitely made mistakes with the going back to saying no. I've definitely verbally committed to this project and realized a month later that it's not going to work out the way I thought it would.
Mm. And of course, of course, you're not married yet, but the other thing that crossed my mind was, while I can set and work on my own habits, do I dare try to get my partner to work on their habits? That's one of those, you can't coach your partner.
Nope, I do not. My father is also really keenly interested in habits, and for a while he always tried, he used to make the joke that he always had these lists of how to change our lives. And it was a joke because he really, every time he wanted to do something, it's like, Dad, no, I just don't want to do that. You really can't change people's lives. You really, the only the only way you can help is if they're ever interested in that particular thing. Then you say, oh, I can help you with this. And that's as much as you leave it. But I think for the sake of just family, romantic relationships, if you're trying to go out and try to change them, that it's just going to blow up in your face. You just have to kind of love it and accept the person for who they are.
So we shouldn't go out and you know, buy one of your books and plop it on their pillow and say, oh, you might want to read this one day.
No. I feel I would get a book the next day that said How to Cook for Yourself. So I don't dare try changing my fiance. I wouldn't do the same with anyone I love.
No, I know. That was sort of a tongue-in-cheek kind of question.
Oh, I know.
Steve?
Yeah.
Steve, I can't believe we've come to just about the end of the hour, and, you know, I thank you for saying yes to spending the hour with me, because you didn't have to. You could have said no. So thank you so much for spending the time in conversation. I think our listeners, my listeners, your listeners, because you will certainly be able to use this if you want, will get some tips out of just creating small habits. You know, the little things can help grow into big changes if we just stick to them. And to me, that's the value of what you write.
Well, thanks for having me on, Sylvia. It's been a lot of fun.
Good. And so with that, one more time, the website is for you?
I would say two places, but they kind of direct the same place. It's developgoodhabits.com. That's just my general blog. But also habitbooks.com, and it just redirects to a page where they can check out all the different books I have to offer.
Great. Well, Steve, again, thank you, and until next time.
That wraps up another hour of Ideas Success with Sylvia, with information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Join me next week. Same dot time, same dot channel, same dot number for another episode of Idea Success with Sylvia.